Hey guys, hope everybody is doing well. I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to sit down with Raf Bohr yesterday and have a chat finally. We've been planning to sit down and have a chat for a while, and we managed to get that done. Really enjoyed it. Spoke a bit about his history in endurance sport and sport in general, which I think kind of goes under the radar because people who have kind of entered the sport recently only see him under the front runner banner. We speak about his history as a physiotherapist as well, and then where he sits now as the director with Front Runner Sports Management. There are a few audio issues to start with, and then also at the back end of the episode with a bit of audio echoing. I haven't cut it out because I think, some of the answers from Raf and the chat is really worth listening to. So hopefully you just persevere through it and enjoy it as well. But it's just minor, as I mentioned at the back end. So enjoy the episode with Raf. As always, if you're new to the podcast, great to have you on board. Hope to get some new content out now with the rest of the year coming ahead. If you're not already, follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, also on Strava as well. It's always great to see people's runs all around the world. A few of you just finished Chicago earlier in Berlin. Some did Perth locally and Cape Town Marathon. We probably are going to start looking at a Road to Comrades series and getting some people together as well as a panel. So if you are an avid listener of the last two of those, there will be something coming up soon as January is just around the corner. So as always, as I mentioned, keep an eye on social media. Thanks so much for following. That's enough from me. Here's my chat with Raf.
Thanks for listening to the Stimulate Run podcast. If you like what you hear, remember to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. If you would like to get in touch or have future guest suggestions, please make contact via email or slide into DMs on any of the social channels. Here's your host, Erwin, with this episode's guest.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Stimulate Run podcast. This episode, I think I bumped into today's guest many times, normally around Lake Munger, and we'll stop for a chat in between he's starting a session or I'm finishing a session, or we'll see each other at the track. A name synonymous with Western Australian running, and I think, on a broader scale, really well regarded in Australian running. And it started with him as an athlete. So a top ITU level duathlete, he moved to physiotherapy. So that'll be interesting to find out a bit of background about him there. And then now director of Front Runner Sports Management, and it's none other than Raf Bohr. Welcome, Raf.
Thanks for having me, mate. Thanks for getting me on.
So you think, like we've mentioned, I mentioned to you off air that I've wanted to have this chat for a long time. I say that to a lot of people, but yeah, time just got away and I ended up sending the message. So I kind of behind getting you on is getting to know a bit more about the man and the person. We see the fluoro singlet or the label, and what a lot of people I think wouldn't know, people new to running or the sport, about you at the duathletes. So should we go right back to the start? Sport in general as a child. I've heard and I've kind of seen a bit of basketball love in the background. So do you want to
Yes.
give me, give us a bit of an insight into to you early days and then through to the duathlon side and how that came about?
Yeah, so I think I was grew up in a very middle class suburb in Willerton, which is like 15K south of the city. And as a boy, my first love was actually cricket. So I had two older brothers and I was sort of playing cricket from a very young age, and then football and basketball, more specific to Willerton. Basketball had a bit of a, I don't know where it quite came from in Willerton, but we had a basketball scholarship at our high school, which I was in, that made basketball very competitive where I grew up. And with cricket and football, like I was always very slight built, so I was pretty lean from a young age. I was always the best runner at my school, but I would never have called myself a runner. I was always aspiring for cricket and football and basketball, but I was always at representative level. And like, so East Fremantle Junior Football, I played with Ben Cousins and a few of those guys, but I was more the bench warmer with aspiration than the star. That was till I was about 15 with basketball. I was playing, wobble basketball as a kid for Willetton, but not quite getting to the state team. And with cricket, I was in the state development squad, but that was almost as a leg spinner. So you almost had a few leg spinners put in the squad for like, it was like the easiest role to get in the squad as a leg spin bowler. So I sort of was good at all those sports, not quite great, but really working hard to be the best that I could be. And in the background, I suppose, I was always sort of just aspiring to be better. And, it was just so entrenched in the values of those suburbs that those were the sports that had the highest value that I was just, like every other boy my age. And at 15, my football coach, who was a two-time Commonwealth gold medalist in the pole vault of all things, Trevor Bickle, he had always been saying, "You're a runner, you're a runner, you're a runner." Eventually, I thought, a few factors, coming up, like you're winning inter school athletics carnivals, but you're training for the other sports. Eventually, I thought, well, let's give this a crack. And so, literally, when I was under 16, so I know I raced Paul McKay in this race. I did my first state athletics race. It was the under 16 state 5K in Kings Park. And it used to be around Lufkin and May Drive, and I won. I beat Paul by a few seconds, and Stephen Stinchmore, who's still running around now. And so I started in athletics, but my first coach, he pushed pretty hard, and I had a few little niggles as I was starting uni, and sort of at that time just jumped on the bike and did a few triathlons just because I couldn't run as much as I had been. And through uni, I started doing a bit of duathlon, a bit of triathlon. I went to a World Junior Duathlon Championship. I was second in the state elite sprint triathlon championships towards the end of high school, just because I was just jumping in with mates and just pushing hard, not really much structure at that point. And then when I graduated from uni, I just got into working as a physio. And I sort of thought, I just do the sea to surf every year. And so it wasn't like there was a huge amount of structure back then, unless you were really, really good. Running was just really the bridges, the city to surf, and if you're a marathon runner, the Perth Marathon. And then the track and field that was taking place was at Perry Lakes on a Sunday morning, like 10 o'clock in the morning, because there was no lights at the old stadium and it was like 40 degrees. So it's almost like anybody who liked long distance running did the fun runs, and no one wanted to run on the track back then. So it wasn't like there was a huge amount of infrastructure or opportunity for running, but I was always passionate about it. But then once I finished uni, I sort of settled into my career. I would never have run more than probably, I reckon, 50, 60 Ks a week through uni. But still would do like a 38-minute sea to surf off that, and be, I think I got third in my final year at uni. I think I won the state 1500 meters, but it was more just pushing myself hard and having fun with it than anything too structured.
And then did you do your own kind of thing, or did are you somebody, and I kind of gather you are, when if you're going in, you're going all in, so you're trying to find out as much information as possible, how to be better at this, what type of systems are in place. But the younger Raf, was that the same type of person? And so when you got into running, firstly, it was all right, what kind of stuff do I need to do? Who do I go see? Who do I talk to?
Yeah, I think I was never super disciplined. Like, I wouldn't have gone well going from high school into the military, but I was very determined. So I would say probably one of the most transformative discussions I had when I was near the end of uni, I got third in the sea to surf behind Ray Boyd and a guy called Alistair Stevenson, who'd come from Queensland and was the Australian 1500 meter champion. And I was just suffering so much. Like, I thought that it was all in my mind. If I wanted to win hard enough, I could win. And I think I was bringing a football legacy mindset. Just put your head over the ball. All these, when I grew up in a middle class suburb, it was all about effort. So those messages were the messages that I'd heard. I'd never heard anyone talk about structure and, intensity and load management. It was just like, if you put your head over, you run through the wall. It was work, 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 work. So I said to Ray Boyd at the end of the race, because I think I lasted 6 kilometers with him, but I was literally, sometimes when I was young, in so much pain because I was pushing as hard as I could. And I would hate to look back at the Garmin if they existed and see what the splits were, but it was just full on all in. And so I said to Ray, "How much are you hurting?" And he goes, "That's not the question." He goes, "How much are you running?" I said, "Oh, about 50 or 60 k's a week." And he goes, "Well, I'm running 160. I'm conditioned for the event, and your mind can only take you so far. Your conditioning is what you fall back to. Your processes, you fall back to your systems and your training, not to your motivation." So that was good advice, but I probably wasn't quite yet ready at that point to be as disciplined as he was going to ask me to be. So Boydie coached me for a little bit after that conversation. But I went out to a race with a few mates out in Leonora, which was a run and bike race, which had $2,000 for first place, where you ride your bike for 20 k's out in Leonora and run for 5 k's. And as I got off the bike, my legs were so jelly because I hadn't been doing a lot of cycling that I actually fell as I got off the bike and hit my hip. I won the race and beat my mate Kieran O'Kane, but on the way home, my back stiffened up and I missed the city to surf. And Ray got quite upset with me for going to this duathlon in the first place. And we never got back onto it, because after that, I was sort of nursing my back for a while. And then I started working, and for a few years, I didn't run particularly a great amount when I first started working. So Ray tried to coach me, but at that stage myself was uncoachable.
It'd be interesting
And
in
he'll tell you
hindsight
that
how
too,
you
I'm sure. And I'm sure he'll say it in probably more direct terms than that. I was probably the worst. I complain about some athletes I coach now, but I was probably worse than all of them.
I know that you're a big advocate for kids not specializing, which I actually really like. Listening to you kind of dabbling in everything as a child, do you kind of take that enjoyment factor that you had as a child, and then I suppose you look at the principles behind not specializing now that you know as an adult, and they've merged together? Like, but for the ones who don't know your views, can you share your views on not getting kids to specialize early?
I think again, everything depends on the context. So if you look at Australian athletics, I think we've been really, really successful because of the little athletics pathway in all the field events. And my thought process around that is that a sport that's heavily skill-based, but with a relatively internal mode of control. So I would say if you're throwing a javelin, the competition doesn't have a huge psychological impact on your ability to throw the javelin. Your ability to regulate your own emotions and the skill to throw the javelin means that you have a high degree of control over the situation. And so in Australia, long jump, triple jump, javelin, a lot of field events, we've had a huge amount of success in those technical events, even the hurdles with, a range of athletes like Sally Pearson and Debbie Flintoff King. In the really highly technical events, Australia's specialisation probably is really helpful, because a lot of other countries around the world don't get access to those really skill-based sports early like we do, and our success is sort of well above calibre. Whereas I think in running, where it's largely psychological, especially in the longer distances, a kid who's racing every single Saturday has no, like, if you imagine, my view is that when you're training, you're building fitness, and when you're racing, you're testing fitness. And if you're racing every week, you're just, you're trying to chop down a tree with the same axe, and the axe is getting blunt, because you're not sharpening it with training. So I think in Australia, my view is predominantly that the running-based sports are negatively served by regular racing in the middle and long distances. And so in that context, I think it just serves people better to be very broadly active, because eventually, the building up of load that needs to be done to be very good in those sports, it's very common that if someone tries to do that before they've gone through puberty, that their heart lungs haven't grown, so you're not really building your engine, you're just working your body and depleting your body. And so the general thing is the hormones in your body profile won't develop what I would call optimally if you run too much when you're prepubescent. And then your body is smart and it says, okay, well, if you're going to do all this running, I'll try to keep you surviving, but I don't need to make your bones particularly dense, because we don't have enough energy in reserve, because they're often running at an energy deficit if they're training too hard when they're young, and their bone density doesn't reach full maturity, and they'll end up with osteopenia or reduced bone density. So when they do try to increase their training as an adult, their body can't tolerate it. So I think, yeah, in long distance running, I think that the data is pretty significant that I think, too much too soon is detrimental long term, in terms of ability to reach your absolute human potential. Does that
And
answer it, mate?
then, yeah, and I think I'm intrigued though in terms of having that conversation. I went back to me as a child and I was doing everything and anything, but that's also for the joy. But you want to also be doing everything and anything, also to a competitive level. Now, you've got to have that conversation with some parents, right? As to kind of go, is this your dream or is it the child's dream? Some of us are fortunate where it is your dream. And the parent is, I suppose, facilitating, but the other way around can be, well, it's theirs and they are putting the pressure on the child to deliver it. How do you have that conversation?
I think it's really interesting that, like, if you look at Sebastian Coe and Inga Ritson, they both have had all their development with their parent, and they've been super successful. So I don't want to sort of sit here and say that I've got all the answers and that there's one way of doing things. But I think in general, my role in coaching and my view of coaching is you're trying to create a robust person, a robust human being, and you're trying to use it more broadly than just to run as fast as they can. You want them to leave running in a better place and move on with all the lessons that running's taught them to be able to apply those and benefit from those in other areas of life, and hopefully keep up running into their later years in a different capacity that's maybe not competitive. So I think what I would say is, in general, and as a generality, my view is that intrinsically motivated kids who are almost told by their parents, why are you running? Like, what's this? What are you doing this running for? That when that internal drive is great and they want to run, they're the ones that you want to work with. If the parents are too involved, it stands to reason that the child can't be as self-motivated because the parents either providing the motivation or imposing stress upon the child's motivation that normally negatively impacts their enjoyment over time. So I think if you have a child who just loves a parent who just loves seeing their child do something they enjoy, I think that's the best case scenario.
I think it's also such a fine line, right? Because a lot of people will say, oh, in hindsight, I wish I didn't waste so much time when I was younger, or I had someone who did actually push me because I might have gone that next step. So it's such a fine line, but I think you kind of know even by observation. But being coached, you also don't want to overstep. So I think, yeah, it's such a murky area. Physiotherapy. So you kind of mentioned, you gave us a bit of a timeline of, study came into your life, but where was the interest from? Was it that normal, typical, oh, like sport, I'm not going to be a professional athlete, let's say, but I want to forge a career in it. This is as close as I can get. Is that where it kind of came from?
Yeah, because those professional sports were the football, the basketball, and all my mates were still playing those sports. So that was a way for me to connect with those sports. So I think the options were I was probably more suited to, say, being a school teacher or a sports science student. But at those periods of time, physio, if you're getting good grades at school, the teachers say, well, you should look at, architecture or law or legal, or being a lawyer or being a physio. So I think, like, our vocational training, like staff at my high school identified in year 10 that about the same time that I was sort of open-minded to pursuing running academically, my grades were good, but I wasn't really applying myself to study. And so the advice was pull your finger out and start to study hard. I mean, my older brothers were very bright. My eldest brother was, 99.9 in his ATAR type thing. So I was ticking along, but I wasn't getting great grades. And that was sort of like, maybe my parents being teachers as well were giving me a push to study a bit harder for a few years. And that was sort of where I ended up,
Do you think that it made you a better athlete, or that it assist you or hinder you? Like, have you ever reflected on that? But at the time, were you a better athlete, from it?
I think when you're a young person, like one of the things, like as I did end up eventually getting into trying to be a professional athlete, one of the big things I realized is that every belief that I had, I could re-engineer and reformat. So when you grow up in a middle class suburb, to think that you can be champion of the world or think you can be these sorts of things, there's not really role models or people that are putting it in front of you. So you have to sort of go on this really inward journey when you start to explore concepts of realizing your potential in any area, and you tend to default to the pathways that are in front of you that you can see, even if they're not maybe what you're inherently destined for. So I think as you walk down the road of life, you try all the things that are socially normal, and then as you start to discover your authentic self and your genuine gifts, they might be different to what society externally validates, even if you've got some capacity there. Eventually, with all the experience you aggregate, your perspective, or my perspective, started to evolve, and I started to just sort of move in directions where maybe they weren't what I was told I should do, but where I felt that I should go, and start to trust my own intuition a lot more. And maybe I realize a lot of people I've come to realize maybe don't have that intuition that for me has always been very strong. And I don't need, my dad is a bit the same. My brothers are the same. I don't need to sit in a room and have a consensus to know what I feel is right. I'm happy for other people to have a different opinion. But if I have I think anyone who knows me, if I believe in something, at that point, it's all systems go. And I don't need, if you're with me, if you're not, if that's what my heart's set on, it's go time. And so I think that growing up in a suburb, that's one thing I did get, was people who taught me to believe in myself. And then when you believe in yourself, when it's time to do what needs to be done, I eventually realized that I needed to get the discipline to do the work that was necessary. And when I was younger, I didn't realize what that discipline was. So my outcomes reflected my ignorance. And then as I started to understand discipline, and as now as I get older and understand it more, I'm starting to feel more in control of every situation because I take responsibility for everything. Whereas when you're younger, you pass the buck, it's someone else's fault. Or, now it's like, okay, well, if you're making a decision, it's my responsibility. Okay, you need to be disciplined with how you approach that.
Pretty refreshing though, and kind of in a way, I suppose I'm thinking a question on the go, but a bit of dispelling the tall poppy syndrome, which is so prevalent in society, right? But it sounds like you also were like, okay, I'm going to be the best athlete I can. I'm moving on from that. I'm going to go to physio, going to be the best physio that I can be and that is available. And now I'm a coach and I'm going to be the best coach available and that's out there and I'm going to bring in a stable and my stable is going to be the best. Not caring about what others think. Whereas in society we're so used to going, oh no, I'll stay down on the second tier because I don't want to put my head above water because it'll get chopped. Am I right in kind of gauging that you've, like you've just said previously, I see goal, get goal, and I don't care what it's going to take to get me there. What
Yeah,
do you think?
and I think probably the biggest barrier for me is, maybe at times, like because of literally, it's not everyone that has that drive. But what I've also realized is I don't care. Also, I don't really gossip about or talk about what other coaches are doing, like, or in my running, in our shop, people often say, have you heard what this person's doing or that person's doing? It's not that I'm not empathic towards what other people are doing, but it just doesn't tend to be my nature to be too worried about what other people do. And I don't wish anybody ill harm or anything. It's like I just don't tend to focus as much on things outside of my control as what maybe I realize some other people do. And I don't know quite where that come from, but it's one of the things I realized that I don't get as distracted when I get that focus and get diverted by what other people are doing. There's a little bit of a tendency towards, a sort of a Zen type approach where I understand the dichotomy of control, and if I have control, then I'll act, and if I don't have control, I can let go. Do you know what I mean? I don't try to control things. And what success looks like for me, say in business, is not for people to say, you know, this person's the leader, but say, well, how many people that I work with can become my peers, you know? And in a lot of ways, that's helped me because the physio who I work with, Steve, is a much better physio than I ever was, my business partner there. And Ben Green's a fantastic coach. My manager at the running store, Sam, is a better salesman than I could ever be. So I think once you dissolve your ego and you have peers that you can work with that are at the same or better level than you in different areas, going to work with them is a joy because I'm always learning. It's not like I want to have a hierarchy where I feel as though I'm in control. Having a dynamic environment where I can try to be the best I can be and we can collaborate to become better together, is an environment that I grew up with when I was a boy in my football club or in my cricket club, and it's how I sort of view the world. But at the same time, when we played, we wanted to win, so we did want to. We didn't care what the opposition were doing. We were like, okay, what are we going to do? What's our strategy? And let's go and do it.
And very much a legacy piece, but it sounds like you're also quite comfortable in your own skin and you don't have this thing of, oh, who's looking over my shoulder and questioning what I'm doing, but more of the legacy side where, you know, you want to be on the porch, to use that term again, and look back and go, oh, yeah, like we gave this life a fair crack, and this is the legacy that's in front of me and I've left behind.
Yeah, I think like it's an and I don't know quite where this comes from, but I've always been, you know, I've been in the company of people, especially older people, and been interested in finding, well, who do I resonate with and who do I see as a mentor or a person who I would want to spend time from and learn from. And they tended to be more the benevolent, educated, benevolent type people who are happy just to drift off into the sunset. Do you know what I mean? They're not, you know, when I don't like to necessarily be the center of anything. I like to have the ability to come home and just be with my wife and kids and chill out. So if you try to create an identity that you're this or you're that, I find sometimes other people try to, what are you? I'm just Raf, and I just move as Raf into any situation. And if I can help, I'll help. And if I can't help, I won't. And I just move very authentically through each day. And I've never been one for a title. So, you know, for instance, with coaching as a physio, it's almost like people used to come to me at the time because I was one of the faster runners in Perth, and maybe the only sort of runner at that time who was a physio before Lauren moved back here. And as I was treating them and getting them back to running, I thought, well, geez, these people, they've got these goals. I'm patching up the injury and then they're just coming back in 6 months. This is not very helpful. I'm understanding that I'm just patching up the problem and then sending them out there and they're just deciding what they should be doing in training and then coming back again. Why don't I try to give them some guidance about how they should approach their training? And if you look at that decision, geez, I mean, we've got nine coaches now. They're helping, they've helped thousands of people over the last 15 years. And even better than that, we were the first people to sort of start to commercially coach. And now there's so many other coaches who now charge for coaching and get to enjoy helping people achieve their goals. So at the start, when we first decided that we were going to start coaching people, it was actually just a solution from understanding that people weren't realizing their goals. We were just treating their knee as if the knee was the problem. The only reason a runner gets injured is because they want to run faster or longer, and they don't quite know how to do that. And so the coaching was an extension of me wanting people to achieve their goals and not wanting just to get paid as a transaction to fix their knee and then say, okay, off you go, for them to just to come back. And that compulsive cycle, I wanted to try to disrupt. And, you know, we've helped a lot of people achieve their goals since then.
So then, speaking of coaching, and we'll drift into there now. What are your, if I said, walked up on the street and I said, Raf, elevator pitch, tell me what your pillars are that are the foundation of your coaching. You know, like what do you fall back on? Can you kind of share, or do you also, is it about the athlete and their specific needs?
Yeah, so I think it's all about understanding the context. And I think one of the things that still hasn't really happened is the segmentation of coaching. So people actually understand, okay, well, what does this coach specialize in and what does that coach specialize in? So for me, I've always loved the endurance space. So I wasn't a marathon runner. I didn't have the temperament or sort of the motivation to probably go in that direction when I was competing. But I always found them really interesting guys to train with, the marathon runners, and always sort of respected that they were generally just super disciplined people who I'd met. And I think also culturally, they were the most visible Australian athletes when I was a kid, like Rob DiCostello, Steve Monteghetti. So when we talk about marathon running, the three KPIs that I use for the marathon running is, what is their ceiling, which is their anaerobic threshold, or their VO2 max. And if it was a kid who started as a junior, I would focus on the ceiling being the VO2 max, like what is the maximum amount of oxygen they can play with. If it's an adult who's a recreational runner, then a safer ceiling is the anaerobic threshold, which is the point where the body is starting to, you know, exponentially produce lactate. So that is a bit safer with adults because it's not quite as physiologically stressful. Whereas if you get an adult who hasn't run for 5-10 years to start running at VO2 max, the risk profile for injury for me as a ceiling outweighs the benefits. So with a kid, it's a slightly higher reflection of capacity. You'd want to see a high VO2 max. You know, as an example, you know, a Kipchoge winning a world 5,000 meter championship as a kid at 18 before he becomes the world marathon record holder. That would be the ideal prototype, is how fast can I get a kid to run 3,000, 5,000 at high school? And then if I think they're a marathon runner, then what is their conditioning, which is, you know, normally largely built around volume per week, and that will have quite a high correlation with what we call their fat max, or their maximal ability to utilize fat as a fuel source. So that's another variable. And then days missed through injury. So if we're pushing either too much on the ceiling or too much on the conditioning, then we'll tend to get an athlete who gets sick or injured. And I think I can safely say my biggest strength as a coach is because I can understand to a significant extent causation of injury, being a physio for many years, I don't make as many mistakes, and my athletes will generally get a lot less days missed through injury because I understand causation to a very significant extent. And so, yeah, those three variables to me, I imagine like a Venn diagram. And if I'm too focused on one, it will tend to negatively impact the others. But if I have a robust view, and keep an eye on that, then when I'm focusing on writing someone's program, I almost close my eyes and sort of I almost see them, it comes to me where I think they're at, what I want, and I layer it. It's like for about 30 minutes when I'm thinking about them, it's like a meditation, and I try to fully concentrate. So if anyone ever comes to me at a training session and says, what should I do? I always say, look at training peaks, because if they get me at training, I might be reactive. But when I'm closing my eyes and writing their program, I think I get that three pillar balance really, really focused. And then the chances of me making a mistake when I'm programming from there, barring anything happening in their personal or life other outside of that, is very low. But if they catch me on the fly and ask me to make a decision reactively, that's when the mistakes will happen.
So then, I'm intrigued in terms of the marathon, and like, you obviously, look, you hang around some of WA's best endurance athletes and training, I'd say Club Helena, those type of guys. You hear about the some of the mythical stories, you know, that's...
And you've been around Todd Ingraham. Yeah, Todd Ingraham, stories.
Even, you know, Boydie, you learn a lot and saw a lot of what they were doing. So even though you hadn't done the marathon, were you somebody who was a observant of what they were doing? But then you said, well, I'm going to go again, coming back to this whole you wanting to be the best at what you do, leaving a nose to unturned to get to know it. Like, so what's the approach there for you, the coach who hasn't done one?
So I suppose ever since I was a boy, if I'm passionate about something, if I'm really passionate on watching something, I'm taking a lot in. And oftentimes, I think it's more objective if you haven't been too biased yourself by doing something. As long as you've been close enough to the context. Like, in other words, the best coach in basketball isn't normally the best player. So if you look at outliers, the athlete who's the outlier, who's exceptionally good, is never going to be able to understand how to get the best out of a sub-elite or a normal person, because generally they've got such unique characteristics that their view of others, until they get much older, isn't ever really a focus, because they're so good. They're not, that they're just, their accelerated development means they're ahead of the curve the whole time. Whereas when you're middle of the group and then learning to work your way up, which is where I was constantly observing, okay, how can I get better? And it doesn't matter what it was. But then with the marathon, I suppose we would have run marathons in training in, I'm imagining, 2 hours 45 or 2 hours 50 just running. It's not as though we didn't run that distance from time to time in training. So I sort of knew, I know what it's like. I just didn't necessarily, you know, have the drive to run that far, because I knew that it wasn't something that really appealed to me personally, to the extent it seemed to some other people. But the ones that it appealed to were just really disciplined, and I really almost like that martial arts type discipline that Boydie had, or Todd had for a while, or Moniz had, or Deke had. I just really respect the character of someone who can sort of almost submit to a monastic life. It's a very everybody in our society now wants to add things in, and when you start getting a disciplined person that starts saying, "I'll withdraw from that. I don't need that," I find those people really interesting. Someone who wants more, who's compulsive, I don't have any real. I don't need more. So I'm a pretty simple guy. Someone who can take things away and be really centered in that and say, okay, I don't need that. I'm just living this simple life. I respected that at a human level. And with my athletes now, there's so many incredible people who are really disciplined, humble, hardworking people that I coach who have a lot going on. And every time I look in their training, it's a green box. And I'm like, this person has discipline. And I respect that. And so I've always, in any context, I respect discipline, and I don't respect ill discipline. If someone's a young elite runner who's fast but soft and ill disciplined, I have no respect. If someone is running 40 Ks a week, has a family, works their ass off, but gives discipline, then I respect that. And it's about their character. It's not about how fast they run. And so the marathon, for me, they have to have that to be good in the marathon. And so at a human level, there's a massive kudos to those people for me, because it's a really admirable characteristic for a human being to just have that internal motivation. So I really admire the marathon runners that I coach and the marathon runners I see, because I think it's, as long as it's balanced, as long as it's not too obsessive, as long as they maintain a consciousness around other things and they've got some balance, I think it's a really good characteristic, and they've got great character.
And I'm intrigued now, like, you know, we can go to a certain point, like your views of, let's say, running currently, and also the coaching world. It seems to just observing, it's very much a buzz. It's a buzz industry at the moment. You know, it's almost like personal training of 10 years ago is what I kind of use my common comparison. What do you think about, I know you're involved in the pathways, but what do you see, I suppose it's interest, money, obviously a driver. But you might see the flip side where you might get people coming through to you who have gone to a quick fix. What are your views? Like, obviously go to a point where you're comfortable with, and with, you know, no names, no pack draws or whatever, but what do you think?
I think in any marketplace, an open market is best for everybody, because people have a choice of what's best for them, and there's never going to be one coach who's the best for everyone. So I think the fact that there's so much choice for people that want to run, I think is a good thing. I like an open democratic marketplace. For me personally, at the start of COVID, our coaching business grew so quickly that we ended up recruiting based on a demand that I was like, okay, well, we better get, it was just the inquiries were coming in so quickly for our team. And I'm like, it's a bit of a pack of cards here in terms of I'm not confident necessarily that we're having enough time to train up coaches because it doesn't really pass the pub test, right? It doesn't pass the pub test. I've done it myself. I test people sometimes. I'll just show up in my tracksuit, Dax, after coaching. People say, what do? If I said I was a running coach, they'll look at you and think you're a jock that never grew up. And they're probably, in a way, right. But it didn't pass the pub test. So young people didn't want to be a running coach. So we were getting people who'd been runners, maybe some who had an opinion but maybe didn't have a lot of knowledge about the science and the physiology, and we were trying to quickly accelerate their development. And I just didn't feel comfortable with our coaching business growing at the rate that it was because I didn't have a huge amount of confidence that we had the right people on the bus in terms of the coaches. Like I couldn't – I mean, I haven't really taken on – I just take – clients who are coming back to me. I haven't taken new clients for 2 years essentially because, and Ben's a bit the same, you know, the demand for everyone must be huge. But we didn't want to bastardize that and compromise the quality. So eventually I was like, well, the problem here for me is HR. And I've got physios are everywhere. And if people are focused on health, I need a for one, if the coaching business is ever going to grow much bigger than what it is, we need some better systems in our business to train staff. But two, if I'm looking at my own family's well-being, if I've got a number of coaches who are opinion-based coaches and I can't trust that they've got a solid fundamental basis for their decision-making and load management and prescription, then I don't feel comfortable with that product. But there's a few of my mates who are physios who our physio business is not getting my attention because I prefer coaching 75% of the time. If I get one of my good friends or a physio of high renown who can manage more physios, then I know that there's 100 physios in the pipeline who can deliver to a good standard and we can make better. Whereas with coaching, I didn't have the confidence that we could be fair-minded with people trusting us if we continued to grow at that rate. So we put the brakes on and essentially created a much more detailed sort of process of understanding the client's needs and understanding what our demand was. Because we just used to let people book a free meeting and some weeks you got 10, 12 free meetings. It's like, well, that's a bull market, which is not what we're there. We're not there to be the biggest. We're there to be the best. We're not going to make an app and start trying to commoditize and use AI to coach a human being. They're a human being. I want to connect to their results. So luckily, a mate of mine who'd been at the Eagles for 8 years with COVID, he'd got caught a little bit away from his family during COVID, and that was really challenging his values. And he's just a phenomenal physio, phenomenal guy. And I explained the situation. I said, look, we've got to sort of just steady on this coaching business and stop it growing too quickly because I'm not confident that we're delivering a standard of service that I'm proud of. But if you can, if you want to, you know, manage a physio team, we can really focus on that. And I was very, very lucky that we continued that conversation with my friend who's an organizational psychologist and helped us work out if it was a good fit for him and for me. And eventually he's come in and the physio business has been the real focus to get that working well. And now, sort of 2 years after us working together, I'm really proud of what he and I are building, and especially in the clinical day-to-day practice, what he's managing with the staff. And now I'm starting to recruit. My focus is I like coaches who are engineers or accountants, who understand systems, who I've coached personally and who have had a good relationship with. And we've got a few of those guys who are just, and girls who are just exceptional because we have the same values. We want to help people. We have to understand the reasoning behind a decision, and it can't be good enough just to say because. They have to understand why we're doing what we're doing. And the coaching director, Ben Green, does an incredible job at making sure that those great coaches get support they need to understand and answer any questions that come up.
And I think the crux of the matter is it's your baby. And as all parents would know, you don't leave your baby with someone you don't really know when they're in those formative years. So, you know, I think you have to protect your house. And you're not just willing to let anybody in, I think, which is quite refreshing as well. Look, man, I know you're conscious of time. We could go for hours. I wanted to kind of talk to you about the long game, you know, and it comes back to getting the right people in your coaching stable, but also your athletes. I'm sure you have people who come to you and go, oh, Raph, I've got a marathon in 10 weeks. Can you help me? And you say, yeah, possibly. But you also have people who know that it's an 8-year journey and that's where the fruits are going to come to bear. Can you kind of give us a bit of, I suppose, your thoughts on the time and the journey and when it does come to fruition?
Yeah, that's a great question, because sometimes you just misread. You get someone who comes in and says they want to just do a marathon, but you're not sure which ones are going to really fall in love with it at that start when you have that first meeting. So sometimes if you're not fully there, you might miss someone who is really a long time commitment. It's always hard to have that crystal ball and see who's going to really persist and who's going to really grab it and progress. And there's certainly been instances where maybe I've been thinking I'd just go and do this and maybe not given someone a huge amount of time.
To finish up, mate, I always ask everybody, if you had a message to your younger self, what would it be?
Just be kind, to people. Be fair, but be kind. And I think I've come full circle. I've explored the extremes of socialism, which school thrusts us into this social jungle, and then intellectualism, then the hedonism of young adulthood, and then capitalism. And ultimately, I think you come back to just being the kid who grew up where you grew up. And if you're lucky enough to have a nice family, you just want to be good to people that are good to you and to spend more time with them, and then to be fair to everyone else.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks so much. I think we just scratched the surface, but maybe we'll have to do a 2, 3, and 4 and go into chapters. But yeah, appreciate it, mate. And I know it's been a delay, but yeah, I'm glad to finally get around to it. And I'm sure there's plenty of listeners that will enjoy it as well. So thanks so much for your time.
And thanks for everything, mate, you're doing to give information and share your passion to the running community, mate. I think it's a growing and great community, so don't underestimate the great work that you're doing and how many people that impacts, mate. So well done.